It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with this Politics Wednesday edition of the program, the night after President Trump's first address before a joint session of Congress. So glad to have with us on this date Donna Hoffman, Associate Professor and Chair of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa in our Cedar Falls studio. Hello, Donna.
Hello, Ben.
Dennis Goldford with us in our Des Moines studio, Professor and Chair of Political Science at Drake University in Des Moines. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Ben. Hi, Donna.
A lot to chew over here. We want your analysis in just a moment. I want to reach out to our listeners as well. Donald Trump says a new chapter of American greatness is now beginning. What's your reaction to the president's address last night? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Well, last night, President Trump addressed Congress for the first time. Donna and Dennis, he delivered a decidedly more unifying and optimistic message than his past major speeches. It was a speech that lasted slightly longer, well, about 60 minutes, slightly longer than each of the last five presidents' first addresses to Congress. Trump received some consistent applause throughout the night from congressional Republicans and at times also from Democrats. The longest applause of the night occurred when he mentioned the widow of Ryan Owens, the Navy SEAL killed in a Yemen raid. Trump even mentioned this applause. He said, "I just broke a record." Well, here's how it all started out last night. President Trump opening his speech before a joint session of Congress.
Tonight, as we mark the conclusion of our celebration of Black History Month, we are reminded of our nation's path toward civil rights and the work that still remains to be done. Recent threats targeting Jewish community centers and vandalism of Jewish cemeteries, as well as last week's shooting in Kansas City, remind us that while we may be a nation divided on policies, we are a country that stands united in condemning hate and evil in all of its very ugly forms.
First minute or so of the president's first address before Congress last night. Donna Hoffman, let me turn to you first of all about that. Or what else jumped out at you about the address last night overall?
Well, I thought that was a surprising way to begin because Trump has been fairly reticent about speaking to those issues. And so the fact that he began his speech that way, I think, was quite interesting and jumped right in, you know, to that. Typically, these speeches have a formula, and largely he stuck to that formula. But, you know, with Trump, you're never exactly sure where your expectations should be set. And we did note that with his inaugural address, for example, it was very much outside the norm in terms of the type of rhetoric that you typically have in those kinds of speeches. It was pretty dark and not particularly unifying. And usually with inaugurals, you have positive unifying speeches.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of thing with State of the Union addresses. There's kind of a formula that goes into it. And so we were, I think all people who watch these kinds of things were waiting to see what kind of Trump would show up for the delivery of this particular speech. And so it did do a lot of the things that we expect these speeches to do. He claims credit for things that he has done, takes positions on policy issues, for example, uses a lot of symbolism, that kind of thing. But even having said that, it was kind of, I viewed it as kind of a weird hybrid speech because there was still a lot of campaign rhetoric in this particular speech, and a little bit less in terms of the governing aspect. This is one of the problems that almost all presidents have, is shifting from campaign mode to governing mode. And the skill set that one has to have to campaign and to govern are also very different. And so there was still an element of the campaign aspect here I saw, but there was more of the governing aspect with it as well.
Mm-hmm. Donald Trump, Dennis, trading the language of American carnage. We heard the American carnage inauguration speech that defined his darker address then. A softer, brighter tone, more optimistic. Is that the way you saw it? How did you see it, Dennis?
If the speech were a song, I think I would say the lyrics, the words were the same, but the music was softer. And I think that it was not overall, I think, the kind of aggressive and fearful be afraid, be a very, very afraid Hobbesian war of all against all message that we saw in his acceptance of the nomination at the Republican convention last summer and in his inauguration address. But there are still elements early on about talking about this rising murder rate, which is factually not the case. Awful situation in Chicago, no question. Various other claims about increased drugs pouring into the country, that's not factually true. So there is still an element of be afraid, but it wasn't as dark and as omnipresent throughout the speech as in those other two speeches. At the same time, I thought that the speech read as if, you know, there's an old line, a camel is a horse built by a committee. It's sort of jerry-rigged together. And to me, that's the way the speech sounded. Supposedly Steve Bannon, whom everybody knows, and Steve Miller, his domestic policy advisor, again, they have a very dark view and a hard-line view of what ails America and a very strong sense of ethnic and cultural nationalism. They supposedly were the two main drafters of the speech, but it didn't read, like to me, like a smooth, unified speech. There were just different chunks. And at times I think that Mr. Trump, who is so good in spontaneous situations, I mean, watch him when he's just at a microphone talking to an audience of supporters. Here he was reading from the teleprompter, and I think in places he looked and sounded as if he were becoming bored with the words he was reading.
Interesting. Join us as we talk at least most of this hour about the president's address before a joint session of Congress last night. Dennis Goldford with us of Drake University, Donna Hoffman of the University of Northern Iowa. River to River listeners, is the address last night leave you hopeful, leave you skeptical? Join our conversation. 1-866-780-9100. Had a few moments of difficulties with our telephone system. I think that's all cleared up. So if you tried to call, couldn't get through, 1-866-780-9100. Let's talk about one of the mainstays of his campaign, Obamacare, repealing, replacing Obamacare. President Trump didn't offer a lot of specifics on policy, but outlined the principles that he wanted to see guiding policy changes, including a replacement for the ACA.
Action is not a choice. It is a necessity. So I am calling on all Democrats and Republicans in Congress to work with us to save Americans from this imploding Obamacare disaster. Here are the principles that should guide Congress as we move to create a better health care system for all Americans. First, we should ensure that Americans with pre-existing conditions have access to coverage and that we have a stable transition for Americans currently enrolled in the health care exchanges. Secondly, we should help Americans purchase their own coverage through the use of tax credits and expanded health savings accounts. But it must be the plan they want, not the plan forced on them by our government. Thirdly, we should give our state governors the resources and flexibility they need with Medicaid to make sure no one is left out. Fourth, we should implement legal reforms that protect patients and doctors from unnecessary costs that drive up the price of insurance and work to bring down the artificially high price of drugs and bring them down immediately. And finally, the time has come to give Americans the freedom to purchase health insurance across state lines.
President Trump last night addressing Congress. In the Democratic response to the president's speech, former Kentucky Governor Stephen Beshear gave these comments. Here's a few of them anyway. He called on the president to, quote, keep his promise that any plan to replace Obamacare not reduce the number of people covered under Obamacare.
You and your Republican allies in Congress seem determined to rip affordable health insurance away from millions of Americans who most need it. Does the Affordable Care Act need some repairs? Sure it does. But so far, every Republican idea to replace the Affordable Care Act would reduce the number of Americans covered, despite your promises to the contrary. Mr. President, folks here in Kentucky expect you to keep your word. because this isn't a game. It's life and death for people.
Former Kentucky Governor Stephen Beshear, of course, Republicans in the U.S. House say they'll introduce legislative plans to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. Dennis, give us a now we have Trump's words from last night thrown into the mix there. Congress trying to come up with a repeal replacement procedure mechanism. What do you see now, this speech adding to it?
Trump seems to have taken sides in a Republican disagreement. You have the Hardline Freedom Caucus coming out of the Tea Party movement and other areas who basically say repeal and we won't worry about replacing or just it'll take care of itself later. So it's sort of repeal is in 100-point font and replace is in 1-point font. They just don't care as much about that. And their view is simply pull the plug now. We don't care what consequences might be. But other Republicans, the ones who've gone out and talked to their constituents, we've saw that here in Iowa and elsewhere the last week or two, and perhaps more in the Senate than in the House, they have this sense that, no, if you don't have a replacement, it's going to cause chaos in the insurance markets. All sorts of difficulties will break loose. So they're a little more skittish about pulling the plug and without a real replacement. And so everybody agrees that you should have maintenance of the prohibition on no insurance for existing conditions and various things like that. They just haven't figured out how to do it yet. But I think Trump has indicated that he stands more on the side of those who want to say steady as she goes, let's do this with all safeguards, as opposed to the people who say just pull the plug and be done with it.
Right, I guess. But are there the votes in Congress with all these factions among the Republicans? Donna Hoffman, what's your read on this?
Well, you know, as Dennis pointed out, this is essentially going to split a significant portion of the caucus off if they are going to go with the kind of more more moderate, that's a relative term here, of course, in terms of not just repealing, but looking at some things to improve the act or replace it. And even the language there can be controversial. Democrats certainly aren't going to go along with this, and it's incumbent then upon the Republicans to try to stay together or peel off enough Democrats to go along with this, which I think is a hard sell at this particular point as well. And so, you know, even former Speaker of the House John Boehner last week was on record as saying he didn't think that Republicans would be able to repeal and replace it. And so in the status quo, then, you know, if they can't do anything, that's what we have, status quo.
Right.
It will continue on. And so I think the Republicans have a lot of work to do in terms of trying to get on the same page and seeing if they can move this forward. And indications so far are not real optimistic on that score for them.
Mm-hmm. This comes in the same week when the president uttered a quote often repeated in the media, who would have thought that health care was so complicated? Certainly Democrats who formed that that piece of legislation know that from 2010. We're reaching out to you this hour to get your reaction, hopeful, skeptical, perhaps reaction to the president's words last night. Donna Hoffman with us, Dennis Goldford as well. Join us, 1-866-780-9100. You can email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Here's a reaction from Ann in Urbandale writing, my reaction is, wow, was he nice? No specifics, no mention of Muslims, and I had pretty low expectations going into this speech. She writes, I'm not going to hold my breath, waiting to see if he can sustain this more normal behavior. That Anne in Urbandale writing. Thanks for that note. Let's go to Carol. Carol joining us from Iowa City. Hi, Carol. Did you watch the speech last night or listen to it on Iowa Public Radio?
Yes, I did.
All right. What was your reaction?
Yes, I did hear the speech. Well, I appreciated the president's more conciliatory tone, but I am extremely skeptical because it's in complete opposition to most of what he said, done, and tweeted in the past. The speech had very few details. I am very concerned about what's happening a lot of times under the radar, like the decimation of the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department and the Voting Rights Act. So I'm not terribly optimistic.
Okay. Thank you, Carol in Iowa City, 1-866-780-9100. Let's talk with Gary. Gary in Ankeny. Hi, Gary.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm fine. What's your reaction to the president's speech last night?
I absolutely agreed with everything he had to say. And my opinion on the health care is I've paid for it all my life as a working person. I work in construction. I feel that my insurance costs go up by the entitlement part of Obamacare, and that is all the people that don't have insurance suddenly get insurance for either next to nothing or free, and who pays for that? I do. All the taxpayers pay for this entitlement program of Obamacare, and I don't think that that's the solution. That's why it's folding in on itself. There's so many people out there that are unemployed, out of work, don't have the resources to pay for insurance,
right.
So they feel entitled that we should take care of them as workers.
So it sounds like, Gary, you don't feel that health care insurance, health care is a right in this country, as many Western countries do view it. You think
I think it could be a right if we worked it out. My view on it, the solution to me is a flat tax. Just tax everybody a few more cents on a dollar that you make, and everybody would be able to have health insurance.
Okay, Gary, thanks for your input. We have a lot of calls to get to, but we appreciate your call. Gary in Ankeny. Jason is with us in Des Moines. Hi, Jason. Your reaction to last night's speech.
Yeah, hello.
Yes, hi, welcome.
Wow, Carroll really knocked it out of the park, and I don't know why that last guy agrees with Trump with what he said supporting universal health care. He should be a Democrat. But my point was I really get frustrated with a lot of the analysis here because, as Carroll said, presidents can come out and promise the ends of the earth and rainbows and be all conciliatory in a speech, but if they go back to the White House to completely undermine everything that they say, we should really focus more on that than just a reaction on a speech here or a speech there. We saw with his inauguration speech, the tone, oh, look at his tone, look at his tone. Who cares about the tone? Look what he did. That's a bigger story.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jason. I think part of our analysis is the tone, but it's certainly, can he carry through with his words? We appreciate your words. Jason in Des Moines, 1-866-780-9100. Let's talk about another major issue in the campaign facing the country for years, immigration. Last night, the president talked about instituting a merit system for incoming immigrants, but also called for a bipartisan plan for comprehensive immigration reform.
I believe that real and positive immigration reform is possible as long as we focus on the following goals: to improve jobs and wages for Americans, to strengthen our nation's security, and to restore respect for our laws. If we are guided by the well-being of American citizens, then I believe Republicans and Democrats can work together to achieve an outcome that has eluded our country for decades.
Okay, President Trump last night during his campaign, of course, Donald Trump pledging to create a deportation task force. Dennis, did you sense a softening here calling for this comprehensive immigration reform?
Not really, because there was still the comment by him with the creation of that new victims unit, right? What did he call that voice? Victims of illegal, help me there.
Victims of immigration crime and
immigration
engagement.
Crime engagement, yes. I mean, everybody wants victims of crime to have some sort of consultation and some sort of help to deal with all this and everything, but he immediately turned it into an illegal immigration issue, suggesting that all illegal immigrants cause crime and all crime is caused by illegal immigrants. That's why there were groans in the chambers last night. So there was an attempt to talk, if he hadn't talked about it in those terms, just saying the victims of any crime ought to have more support from various kinds of agencies, including governmental agencies. I don't think anybody would have objected to that, but there was still that sort of jab in the side of immigration.
Mm-hmm. And I would add there, Ben, that, you know, the guests that presidents invite to these events are important, and they're often used in speeches since Ronald Reagan and Trump did that. And four of his guests were related to this particular initiative in which he highlighted, and they were people who had been victims of crimes done by immigrants. And, you know, again, highlighting that is out of whack in terms of what we know about that particular population and their propensity to commit crimes, because it's not actually higher than citizens.
Mm-hmm. Lower, in fact, I think, when you take it as a demographic group, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Asking for reaction to the president's speech last night from Donna Hoffman and Dennis Goldford, also from you, 1-866-780-9100. Of course, you can email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Karen in West Des Moines, cautious about this new tone from President Trump. She says if in 18 to 24 months he's proven himself trustworthy, then and only then can you cautiously exhale, writes Karen in West Des Moines. Thank you for that. Let's see. What if some of the other, Dennis, another point that we haven't touched on yet. Of course, we're going to talk about this in the second half hour. We have about 2 or 3 minutes in this half hour. What do we need to touch on from last night that jumped out at you?
Well, for all the calls for unity and the kind of bipartisanship, and again, I think, again, Iowa Public Radio accepted, you know, so many folks in the media just swoon at the thought of a softer tone or things like that. So the one caller, I think, was correct to be a little skeptical of that. But I think if you notice toward the end, I guess it would have come across, I believe, over the radio, but on television when he talked again about... he used the phrase, "We can end trivial, what was it, trivial differences or trivial fights," but he looked right at the Democrats and sort of made a gesture. In other words, your differences with me are simply trivial. They don't matter. They're not important. There's not a significant constituency.
And there was an audible reaction from the Democrats.
Right, right. So, you know, there's a fig leaf of let's bring us together. But I don't know really how much is under that fig leaf when you have Steve Bannon saying he thinks that establishment Republicans, not even to mention Democrats, are the main enemy.
Mm-hmm. Let's take Sam in Des Moines. Sam, coming up on a break here. I have to ask you to make it quick, but welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
You know, your guest there made a perfect point. This is not, you know, there's people look at this and they're expecting a policy pivot, you know, expecting a softer tone. That's not what this is. Trump has, you know, as many votes as he needs in Congress to get what he wants done. You see that that section towards the end that your guest was talking about there where, you know, Trump points directly to the Democrats and say, we're going to do it and we're going to do it right. You know, he's not asking for the opinions of the left. He's saying this is the plan. Get in line.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing a lot of parallels to a speech given by Barack Obama around, I think it was 2009, 2010, after all the protests against his presidency. You know, he finally had to say, you know, I won, get over it. I feel like that's the same thing that's coming from Trump here.
Okay, Sam in Des Moines, thank you very much for your input. We're going to take a short break and be back with more of your reaction to the president's first speech before a joint session of Congress. Donna Hoffman with us of the University of Northern Iowa, Dennis Goldford of Drake University, and when we come back, we'll also share a new Iowa poll that shows that even though Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton in Iowa by 9 percentage points, approval for the new president in the first 40 days or so is now underwater, according to a new Iowa poll. We'll talk about that and ask our guests why that may be. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. We're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're talking about the president's address, his first before a joint session of Congress last night, calling it a new chapter of American greatness that is now beginning. Give us your reaction. 1-866-780-9100. With us this hour, Dennis Goldford, professor and chair of political science at Drake University. Donna Hoffman, associate professor and chair of political science at the University of Northern Iowa. So glad to have them with us to give us their thoughts on this and where we find ourselves approximately, I don't know, 40 days into the Trump presidency. Before we go back to callers and some other points, I wanted to pick up on Sam's point before the break. Sam in Des Moines, hearkening back to the beginning of the Obama presidency, when Trump looked at the Democrats last night and said, you know, not going to play any trivial games. He said it sounded like perhaps that could have been something akin to what Obama did in 2009 with both chambers in his in the Democrats' hands and him in the White House. Donna, do you see a similarity there? We know the Affordable Care Act was passed with, what, no Republican votes, right?
Well, there's a big difference here in that the Democratic margins were quite large. The Republican, with Obama, the Republican margins right now with Trump are actually not that large, especially in the Senate. And given the some of the ways the Senate works, that can cause problems. And so it is important for presidents to extend that olive branch, and this is a good speech to do that in. You know, another thing about Dennis was talking about Trump's, you know, kind of body language. Another thing I noted about his body language, if you are familiar with how the House is set up for that particular speech, the Republicans were on Trump's left. And for much of the speech, he was tilted in that direction. And only occasionally did he look at the Democrats. The Democrats were sitting on their hands for most of the speech. And so I found that, you know, kind of interesting because you don't typically we always get the seesaw thing, regardless of who the president is. But the president tilting in that way was kind of interesting. But the bigger point here is this is a speech in which one can at least put some conciliatory rhetoric in the speech. And there wasn't a lot here. It was and another thing about Trump's rhetoric here, it was very self-centered in the sense that he does this quite often, you know, talks about I, not a lot of we. Obama's speeches were pretty prominent in terms of using we a lot more. Trump's going to be a lot more prominent in terms of using that I. And if we remember back, you know, during the campaign at one point, he said, I alone can fix this. And he hasn't broken out of that mold. And that signals to people who watch politics and political scientists that there's still kind of that disconnect, because if you are just going to rely on your party to govern, that can cause you problems. And again, I go back to the Affordable Care Act. The Republican Party in the House in particular is split over exactly what they want to do, whether it's just repeal and stop or repeal and replace. And then we have to get down to what that replace is going to look like. And that takes a lot of effort, even if it is happening mainly within one party. And the time when the Republicans were on the outs in the Obama administration, meaning the out party, they were passing repeal after repeal with symbolic votes in the House, but they hadn't quite gotten all together on the same page to prepare themselves for actually governing, and that's the big challenge now.
Mm-hmm. So symbolism, a speech meeting the policy, will it translate? In what degree will it translate, huh, Dennis?
You have to remember that, at least with regard to political professionals of the sorts sitting on Mr. Trump's left last night that Donna noted, as opposed to the folks out in the country, with regard to the political professionals in the Republican Party, the Trump candidacy and nomination and victory were a hostile takeover of the Republican Party, as I think we've talked about here before. And Republicans in Congress, to a great extent, have made a deal that they can use Donald Trump for what they want, to enact their particular agenda. That's why, leading up to the speech, with all that you saw, Vice President Pence and Speaker Ryan there just having a great old time and smirking and being smug in various ways, absolutely loving the position they're in. They think they can use Donald Trump for their purposes to enact their agenda. That's not the way Donald Trump operates. I think he's trying to figure out what to do with regard to Republicans. Democrats, I think he simply regards at this point as pretty much of a nuisance.
Mm. Okay. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Jamie is with us in Des Moines. Hi, Jamie. You watched the speech last night. What did you get out of it?
Hi. Just wanted to say thanks for taking my call, and I'm actually a former student of Dr. Hoffman. Just wanted to comment today about some of the concerns that other callers have had regarding the lack of details in the speech. And my comment is that I think that's more consistent with many of our presidents in the past, not just with their rhetoric, but I think that sometimes the details are almost implicitly implied with how we think or how well we think they can get the job done.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jamie, thank you very much. Level of detail there. This speech already slightly longer than each of the past five presidents' first addresses to Congress. So, Donna, we can't have much detail in this. We would put people to sleep, wouldn't we?
Well, it depends. And, you know, there are elements typically in this speech where a president will go into some detail on a couple of things. This was much more surface. Oftentimes, the speech is criticized for being a laundry list, and that definitely was the case here. But this can vary both from president to president, but also within a presidency in terms of how much they do an overview or how much they decide to delve into something. And so, you know, given that this is Trump's, you know, first speech to a joint session, an overview is entirely something that's within the realm of what you would see. Nevertheless, there are times in which you will get details. And this is one of those speeches that it's formulaic, you know, as it's oftentimes is, in fact, put together by committee. It's not an elegant speech in that sense. And so oftentimes it doesn't make a whole lot of people happy. And everybody's trying to get their pet project in that bill for a mention. And so, you know, again, presidents, even the same president from speech to speech, can do different things here. But this one was notable for not a whole lot of detail in terms of this is what I want to do, and here's how we want to do it. The other thing that was really lax here was, you know, this is also a speech, ideally, in which you're asking Congress to do things. There wasn't a lot of that here either. There were only a couple of times when he specifically asked Congress. A lot of it was, you know, basically, here's the executive actions I'm going to pursue.
Mm-hmm. Even without detail, though, and I agree that, you know, the devil's always in the details. But even without detail, this, to me, was the most policy-oriented speech I've heard Donald Trump give. I mean, he's not a big policy guy. He doesn't know a lot about a lot of policy areas. His major concerns were, of course, returning jobs to the country and building a wall. Other than that, really, he didn't talk much about policy.
Let's play a little.
But this was a policy speech.
Let's have a little bit of Donald Trump from last night, in which he was somewhat specific as far as his budget was concerned. The president talked about increasing military spending. We heard a lot about 10% this week, launching a major effort to repair the nation's infrastructure, something like a $1 trillion effort there. And also this, a new program for paid family leave.
My administration wants to work with members of both parties to make child care accessible and affordable, to help ensure new parents that they have paid family leave. To invest in women's health and to promote clean air and clean water and to rebuild our military and our infrastructure.
Okay, there we have, counted by one news organization, mentioning women 7 times in his speech. The wall, his border wall, only once. So I wonder, Donna, does this put the Democrats in a certain position? While they may not agree with his agenda, do they go along with that idea, family leave, for instance, paid family leave?
Well, that certainly is historically something they've supported, and Republicans in Congress typically have not. I was not able to see the audience, and they're clapping during that particular point, so it would be interesting to see that. Again, Democrats have to still, and I don't think they've totally done this, I think they're leaning a little more towards being obstructionist, but they do need to decide if Donald Trump wants to do infrastructure, if he wants to do paid family leave, how much are we going to cooperate in that regard? And those are things that lots of Republicans are going to peel off of. So if Donald Trump is going to get either infrastructure or paid family leave, Democrats are going to have to go along with that. The question then becomes, what's Donald Trump willing to do in order to get those things? Is he willing to work with Democrats? Is he willing to slight, you know, half of his Republican caucus or more in doing that? And I think those are open questions, because we start to get differing objectives that presidents and members of Congress have. Don't forget, 435 of those people sitting in that chamber last night, the House members, all have to run for reelection in basically a year and a half. And Donald Trump does not. And so that is something that is going to increasingly be on those Republicans' minds that have to run, and the Democrats, too. How popular does Donald Trump stay? How unpopular does he get? That's one of the big calculations here for how you position yourself as a member of Congress as well.
Dennis, what about these ideas that are not necessarily the Republican ideas, the $1 trillion infrastructure plan, the paid family leave, also in that infrastructure plan, Donald Trump invoking the name of Dwight Eisenhower? I guess, who started our interstate system back in the 50s. So do you see support coming together from both Republicans and Democrats here?
Well, some Republicans, perhaps. There are quite a number of things, as Donna noted, that really are not things Republicans would be comfortable with. You know, he talked about he said, I'm not a protectionist, but, and basically laid out a protectionist argument, as opposed to a notion that the free market on a global basis produces the best of all possible worlds for everybody. That's Republican orthodoxy. Trump's economic nationalism doesn't accept that. So there's some things he talks about with regard to paid family leave and infrastructure, things like that, that's potentially something, a few things that he could work with Democrats on. The Democrats have to decide whether they want to enable him and try to split the Republican caucus by agreeing to work with him in some areas. But they, I think, at the same time, haven't decided whether to do that or to exact a particular price for doing so, or following the Republicans' playbook for the last 8 years, be as obstructionist as possible, and say to the Republicans, you bought it, you own it.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk briefly before we get to these new poll numbers out about the things that were not mentioned or mentioned very, very briefly. Trump mentioning the hallmark of his campaign, the border wall, only once, saying construction would begin soon. No attack on the media, hostility towards the media, absent from this address, even though, as of late, he's calling stories he doesn't like, fake news. No mention of voter fraud or Hillary Clinton. What do you make of that, Donna?
Well, those are, you know, attempts to be more presidential, quite frankly. And, you know, again, I think much of the reaction to the speech that Trump gave last night is that he could be somewhat presidential. Now, again, this is not really that high a bar that you read a speech off a teleprompter,
right.
But Trump has been loath to do that in a lot of occasions. And again, not be particularly oriented towards policy. Those things you mentioned are not really policy things. They're political things. And so this is, again, that different type of speech. This is a well-known type of speech, and the people around him participated in putting it together in a fairly traditional format. Again, there's a few things that were a little interesting, but gave, you know, what is typically a standard State of the Union, even though technically this isn't a State of the Union, it functions in the same way.
Mm. Let's focus in on Iowa a little more specifically with a new poll. There were six swing states that were key to Donald Trump's unexpected win in November. Iowa, one of them, in fact, Iowa, the swing state where Trump's margin of victory was the highest. Hillary Clinton lost here by 9 percentage points. A new Iowa poll taken, obviously, before the Trump speech last night shows Trump's approval rating now underwater with Iowans. This is a poll of 802 Iowans conducted February 6th through the 9th by Seltzer and Company, and has a margin of error of plus or minus 3.5 percentage points. Let's comment about that. Specifically, only 42% of Iowans approve of the job President Trump is doing. 49% disapprove, according to the Des Moines Register Mediacom Iowa poll from late last month. From the beginning of February. Dennis, what do you see in these poll numbers? In a swing state where Donald Trump handily beat Hillary Clinton by 9 percentage points.
Well, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think that the key thing to say is that those numbers by themselves don't mean anything, because I'm sure if you broke it down by party registration, Republicans would be tremendously supportive of Mr. Trump, as they are nationwide. It's almost completely mirror image polarization. Democrats highly unsupportive, highly unfavorable, barely any favorable, and the Republicans highly favorable,
exactly.
Barely any unfavorable. So I suspect that there's a little movement among no party or independent voters in Iowa to be a little concerned about the Trump presidency, but they're the ones basically who put him over the top. So if they're the ones who, in fact, have shifted, then it wouldn't be a huge numbers, but if they've shifted to slightly more disapproval than approval, that makes the difference. But there's no election for a while, so mm-hmm. I don't think there's a worry for him.
Right, and to fill in a little bit of the numbers, I do have them in front of me. So the Republicans overwhelmingly approving of Trump's early actions, 82% approving. Democrats, right, that mirror image you mentioned there, Dennis, 86% disapproving, so showing how deeply polarized we are to that independent vote you mentioned. Independents in this poll leaning against the new president, 50% disapprove of his handling of the presidency, 39% approve. Also, before you comment, Donna, please, this year, that varies depending where you are in the state. In eastern Iowa, approval for Donald Trump in the low 40% range. Highest in northwest Iowa, 55% of Iowans approving. Lowest in the southeast corner of the state and in the Des Moines area, where there's only 31% approval among Iowans for Donald Trump. Donna, your comment.
Yeah, the political geography of Iowa, you know, has long reflected kind of some of those breakdowns. But, you know, the important thing to think about here in terms of Iowa being a swing state, We swing back and forth in terms of the candidate and the party of the candidate that we've been supporting. So the swing here was quite great. And, you know, one of the things, I'm doing some research with Professor Chris Larimer, who's also on your show at times. Mm-hmm. We're looking at the first congressional district in Iowa, which is 20 counties in northeast Iowa. And in 2012, only three of those counties went for Romney. In 2016, only two of those counties went to Clinton. There's definitely a very much of a rural-urban divide here. The two counties that supported Clinton in 2016 were Blackhawk, which is where Cedar Falls, Waterloo is, and Linn County, Cedar Rapids, and Iowa City. And so the divide here is one that's not surprising. What is surprising is those rural Democratic voters. In the eastern part of the state in particular, the counties the counties we think of as being blue or Democratic mm-hmm. also contain a big contingent of no-party voters. Those western counties, though, in Iowa are pretty much just solidly red. There's not a lot in terms of Democrats and no-party voters there. So on the eastern side of the state, you have that variability that those no-party voters or what we might think of as independents oftentimes give us. And in this particular cycle, they massively swung over to being Trump voters. The question becomes, you know, will they stay there? And again, even with the poll numbers, looking at those independents that you looked at, you know, they're the ones that are kind of in the middle there. 50% of them are saying they're disapproving. The Washington Post also had an interesting feature on Iowa. I believe it was yesterday. A reporter came and traveled across the state of Iowa looking for public opinion, basically.
Spoke with about
Trump.
100 Iowans, yeah.
Right. And, you know, there was some disquiet there on the part of some people who supported Trump. Not everybody, but some. In particular, when the devil comes down to the details. Well, okay, what about corn exports? If Mexico no longer wants our corn, what will that do to us? What about wind power? What about massive deportation of workers who disproportionately in Iowa work in the meatpacking industry? That's where you get down to the details in terms of how actual policies may start affecting the everyday lives of Iowans, and there's a lot of uncertainty there.
I think you need to add, though, everything Donna said I agree with. I think what's important to add, though, is that, remember, the Democrats nominated, fairly or not, in terms of reputation, the most despised woman in American politics. And a lot of independents and maybe even a few Republicans disquieted by Trump voted for Mr. Trump as the lesser of two evils. With Clinton out of the picture, then, you know, the lesser of two evils is still an evil. And so with Clinton out of the picture, they look at Trump less in comparative term. Right. Well, he's not as bad as she is, and realize, well, considered in and of himself, there's still some things about him I'm not comfortable with. I think that's the way a lot of these folks figure this.
Let's end the hour here when we finish up in a couple minutes by listening to this and have you react to this. This is what we've, of course, heard in the media reaction, some analysts pointing to this restrained, more presidential-sounding Donald Trump. No mention of Mexico paying for a wall, one mention of radical Islamic terrorists, no criticism for the press in this speech last night. In the Democratic response, Governor Beshear tried to refocus attention on some of the president's past rhetoric.
President Trump also needs to understand that people may disagree with him from time to time, but that doesn't make them his enemies. When the president attacks the loyalty and credibility of our intelligence agencies, the court system, the military, the free press, individual Americans, simply because he doesn't like what they say, he's eroding our democracy, and that's reckless. Real leaders don't spread derision and division. Real leaders strengthen. They unify. They partner. And they offer real solutions instead of ultimatums and blame.
Former Kentucky Governor Stephen Beshear with the Democratic response to last night's address. So in the final minute here, I guess this could all be wiped. The speculation could all be wiped away by a couple tweets later on today. Whether we have a pivot here in the Trump presidency. Donna Hoffman, your thoughts as we end here. The degree to which Trump could leave an old president profile behind and gain a new one here?
I don't think he fundamentally changes his stripes, but he can act presidential, and that's, you know, what the occasion last night demanded, essentially. The forum is, you know, more formal, et cetera. But it is, you know, I don't think that you're going to change that Donald Trump is relatively thin-skinned. He doesn't like pushback. And he typically reacts, and his forum for reacting is Twitter, and that's, you know, he can do that relatively immediately. And I don't think we're going to see changes there, but again, he has shown that he can give a speech in a presidential fashion in the House chamber. Okay. Will that fundamentally change what he does? The policies were essentially the same, as we've talked about. No, I don't think so.
Okay, Dennis Goldford, 30 seconds for you to wind up.
I'll shift from Donna's zebras to my dog. It's hard to teach an old dog new tricks.
All right. 70-year-old dog in this case, right? We will see. That's what makes Politics Wednesday so exciting, and also so exciting to have the insights of Dennis Goldford with us and Donna Hoffman. Dennis, professor and chair of political science at Drake University in Des Moines. Donna Hoffman, associate professor and chair of political science at the University of Northern Iowa. Dennis and Donna, the two D's. Great to have you teamed up.
My pleasure.
Great fun.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Help today from Chelsea Hoy. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.